Okay, my next one's on 307.
Yep, that's where I'm...
Okay, I mentioned this in past meetings, 10-185-030, Natural Resources. A, public access to waterways. This language says the Board of Supervisors shall not approve a tentative or final map for a subdivision fronting on a public waterway, river, or stream unless reasonable public access is provided or available from a public highway to the bank, blah, blah, blah.
I almost...
Just to be clear, does this only apply to subdivisions? And even if it does this not set a potential precedent for them approving other projects on ag land that border riparian and may have a county road bridge crossing? Could it not be argued by a lawyer to force the county to provide public access if we, or is this a state law?
I think Bill and I would be comfortable with this because it's a state law, right? It's public water, right? Public waterway, you can't cut off the public's access to a public waterway. So, us.
Oh, yes, you can.
You can't go walk across somebody's private property to get to a waterway.
There are limitations.
I mean, I look at that as requiring a dedication of land and whether you can just do it by flat ordinance. I'm not sure I feel comfortable with it, I think, in the first place.
Because you always hear about this is a public beach. Yes, you bought the property, but the public's always been accessing the ocean along this, right? Those are the right cases. And maybe the laws change because I haven't looked at it in a couple of years, but that's, you know, you always hear those cases like, no, you need to maintain and allow access. The public's had an access trail to the ocean, you know.
Okay, but we're talking very different things.
Different things. There you're dealing with the Coastal Commission.
Yes.
Yeah. But then I think about Scott River, right? And I think Black Bridge. I'm like, yes.
Public access.
Yes, but just we all know historically people go park and go over and go underneath, you know. So it's like that's the type of thing that we're dealing with here. So I don't know that we could change that. I think that is a state, you know, that's coming out of like a state requirement, right?
Well, I'm bringing this up because if you're talking a subdivision, then you're talking we are approving a project, a subdivision, which is going to have public access to roads, etc. Lake Shastina. Lake Shastina, the community has designated points of ingress, egress mm-hmm. to Shastina. That is not the case on the Shasta River, on the Scott River, on the Salmon River, etc. And I'm concerned here. I get it.
Grant rights here. We should have got legal rights to grant.
Right.
But didn't they have to be legal? Navigable waterways for this.
That's correct.
That's correct, and both of them are considered navigable.
But Chester
and we define it. If you look,
tributaries are not
right. The French Creek is
French
not
Creek, Sugar Creek, Sugar Wildcat Creek, Creek,
right. East but Forks, Scott and Shasta East have been, even with Young's Dam, have been designated as navigable. Hmm. And that's why I'm bringing this up because several years ago, the supervisors took a strong position that they would not allow public access to the river off county bridges, and they cited all the bridges in Scott Valley because it was going to be a trespass, and it was a safety issue, and it created a liability for the landowners. But if we're going to be putting in here, and I get this is specific paragraph is on subdivisions, but I want to be real careful how we word this so it can't be also used
expanded
on non-subdivision, a parcel map or whatever that's coming before us
okay.
that's on private property, not a subdivision, a boundary line adjustment, zone change, whatever it is, that we don't end up creating a loophole for an attorney to say, okay, supervisors have to allow, either they have to deny the project because it doesn't have public access, or they have to have a finding condition where public access is allowed.
So maybe for the next meeting, we can, I mean, I will contact the consultants regarding it, but we can actually pull the actual state codes that might give us a better idea.
Also a lot split with four units and a remainder, does that qualify as a subdivision?
No, we just had, and I don't say that like, no, but just, I think we just had that where we did, remember we did the McLeod Partners, right? They had four and a remainder.
That's not a sub, would we classify it as subdivision?
No, it wasn't, it was just a parcel map.
Parcel map.
The state code, I'm reading it, it's government code 66478.4A, if that's the right one. And it says, no local agency shall approve either a tentative or a final map of any proposed subdivision to be fronted upon a public waterway, river, stream, which is, does not provide or have available reasonable public access by fee or easement from a public highway.
Right. So that's verbatim here. I guess The reason I'm bringing this up is because this paragraph
is taken out of context and used another.
It's located under dedications and reservations, which is separate from subdivisions.
Yes.
If we're going to have it in here, it needs to be up specifically related to subdivisions only, not in chapter 10, which is much broader than subdivisions, talking about dedications and reservations. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So the structure is part 6 deals with subdivisions, and then under that is that section that you're talking about.
Chapter 10 is under
subdivisions. Does that make sense?
Well, no, because then if you continue down, I mean, it goes into great detail of definition of public waterways, mm-hmm. easements along waterways,
mm-hmm.
and I guess they do mention subdivision. Okay, so this is
if you look
solely
at the top, right,
under subdivision.
Yeah, part 6 is just deals with subdivisions.
Okay.
And then it splits.
I saw chapter 10 as being a separate entity.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, me too.
But again, I understand the concern that it's being taken out of context and used in other, to support other projects, you know.
Okay. So then the road names is also in chapter 10 as it relates to subdivisions.
Yes.
Okay.
Landscaping from the prior meeting you're talking about?
Page 317. And this is as it relates to subdivisions.
Okay.
It's very general. Landscaping shall be restored and maintained to a high standard of appearance and quality where significant new landscaping is required. A landscape plan shall be subject
to permission approval.
I guess that's fine. I'm thinking 4291 regs, really maybe it's appropriate that landscaping meet 4291 regs, which we as a planning commission obviously are going to take into consideration, but I think the key part there is maintained or managed.
It's PR 4290.
Yeah, it's 14CC. Well, yeah, PRC. No, yeah, PRC 4291.
Okay.
I was getting something else in my head.
Yeah, I was getting confused too. So it should be referenced.
I've got a tidbit. want to. It's like, we're almost done. I'm trying
to get
soda and water now.
Subdivision improvements.
Remember, we also have the July meeting, you know?
We are so close, because I don't have too many more highlights.
Yeah, okay. So with lot line adjustments, which is the chapter after, this is where we got rid of that double frontage, right?
Yes.
So that, we took that out of that.
Okay, my next question isn't until 329.
Okay.
So reversions
to acreage.
The general idea being property that's subdivided can be reverted to acreage, meaning basically subdivision map lifted and it goes back to the pre-existing zoning, or does the landowner have a choice instead of going back to, say, an RR or an RL, they could go to TPZ or to Ag 2? Does it have to go back to what it was zoned prior to the subdivision?
I think it depends on the parcel size, wouldn't it?
Bill, maybe you could weigh in on
the... Or this is getting rid of the parcel. Okay.
My understanding is it doesn't deal with zoning at all. It's two separate things. It's just the subdivision is really talking about boundaries and what is existing, not the actual what the zoning is. It's totally two different things. So whatever zoning it is, even if the property boundaries are redrawn so that the piece becomes one larger piece and not the subdivided piece, the zoning is what it is, and then if they want to choose to rezone, right, they can, but it doesn't automatically revert back to the original zoning, right? It wouldn't make sense to do that.
Well, that's why I'm asking, because we have had at least one project since I've been on here that it created a subdivision, and the original zoning was a mix of AG2 and rural residential. And in the process of approving the project and the subdivision, the zoning inside basically became, I think it was RR1.
Mm-hmm.
And so if that subdivision was never developed, or there was a request to lift that development,
mm-hmm.
What I hear you saying is all of those created lots would remain RR1. They would not go back to RR and AG2.
I agree.
Because as part of the process, go ahead, sir.
Yeah, you can go.
Okay, as part of the process, remember, you could always put conditions of approval on things. So if there's a reversion to acreage thing that comes up and you're like, yes, we're going to authorize this to be rolled back, but as part of that, the Planning Commission allowing that, a condition of approval will be the land that results from this will be zoned this. Does that make sense? That way, that gives the Planning Commission the discretion at that time, at that reversion to acreage project, to make a determination what the appropriate zoning should be for that land now that it's being reverted, as opposed to having a flat, okay, it's reverting, so it's going to exactly go back to the way it was, where it might not be appropriate, as opposed to having the opportunity to say, now that this is going to be the current situation for the land, the appropriate zoning for the land should be this.
Okay, so you are painting a path where the landowner is requesting the reversion to acreage.
Yes.
Not a reversion to acreage due to expiration of the PD.
I see what you're saying.
So those are two different things. I get if the landowner changes his mind and doesn't do any of the development and everything expires and becomes null and void, is that also a reversion to acreage?
Should be.
Because if it is, that's why I asked the question. He's not coming in saying, hey, I don't want to do this anymore. I want it to go to this. If he doesn't come in and say that, what is the underlying zoning?
Well, there would be no reversion to acreage if he never finished the project, though, right? If he never finished.
Why not?
Because if he never finished and filed the final map, then it's just, it is what it is. You never finalized the final map.
Okay, so
it never got submitted.
It doesn't.
So it goes back to the original zone.
Yeah, it's just, it is what it is because you didn't finish your project.
You start all over again.
You turn in half your homework, it doesn't count. You know?
Yeah. Okay.
So that's how I would see that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Not to create other issues, if part of the subdivision was developed, say the north third of it, but the southern two-thirds wasn't, then the landowner could come in and designate that two-thirds be removed from the PD.
And if that was allowed, then that would be the perfect situation where the planning commission would be the appropriate body, be like, this is, yes, we will grant that, but as a condition of approval, because it's in our prerogative as a planning commission.
This is the zoning.
That we want the zoning to be this. Okay. If you want our approval, this is what it's going to be.
Okay.
Otherwise, no.
Are most of these PDs though done in phases?
Yes.
So phase one gets.
But again, you're talking about planned developments as opposed to a subdivision. It's a totally different, you know? Because planned development is free for all, basically, whatever you guys believe is appropriate for French Peak or wherever, you know?
Did you have something to say?
Well, actually, the subdivision maps, it would make sense it goes to the Planning Commission for recommendation. Maybe it does. I mean, the Board of Supervisors makes the final decision for the subdivision maps. It does go through. I understand that. Yeah. But for reversion, actually, it does say it goes to the Planning Commission for recommendation, the BOS. So.
Okay. So
my next question is on page 333.
And there's only 400 pages, Commissioner.
We're getting there.
So we're there and there.
Okay.
Anybody have one before that?
I do not.
Okay.
Are we still in part six there?
Yes. Okay. My question is under parcel mergers. So now that you've
number?
Page 333.
Okay.
Parcel mergers. I now understand this is all under the subdivision chapter 6, but my question is, the same freedom of request to merge contiguous parcels available to a landowner outside a subdivision?
Well, I mean, we do that now with the boundary line adjustment process, right?
You're adjusting boundary lines, but I'm saying parcel A, parcel B, I
are merged together.
I want to put the two together and just have one parcel.
And that would still, because boundary line adjustment is, as long as no more parcels are being created, right? No new parcels are being created, no additional parcels. The fact that you're getting rid of one and merging the two, that's still appropriate.
Okay. So if I were to come in and do that, and we have a boundary line adjustment is the process I'd have to go through, planning recognizes that now as one parcel. But how about for APN purposes and taxes? Because right now, tax is
goes
different
to multiple
than
parcels,
planning.
Yeah.
How does that communication work for people coming in with projects like this?
You know, that's usually between the property owner. This is based on my observation of how these things come up with when Bernadette's doing her thing. It's just when people want to merge their APNs, they contact Craig K directly, deal with that, because that's totally different. Because the APNs are just basically how the county assesses their taxes and stuff.
So that, you just hit on it. somebody could go to Craig and merge two parcels to create one APN, but they don't have to come through planning to go through a boundary line adjustment if they own both parcels. See, that's what I'm
thinking. Yeah.
That's the disconnect that I see happening.
Yeah.
Exactly what you described.
But it's never, I mean, the assessor doesn't blindly, I mean, this is my experience with Craig, like, just because we say, hey, you know, these two properties are being merged, the assessor still may keep the APN separate just because based on what's being developed on the land, right? Because they're taxing a certain part of the property a certain way. That's why they have those separate APNs, even though it's actually one parcel. The one parcel may have multiple APNs, right? Right, because some of it may be TPC. That's just the way it is, you know, that I've seen. So I always thought APNs corresponded to the parcel. Like one parcel gets one. No, it's how the assessor collects the money, you know, and that's why. So there is a disconnect, but it's okay.
I have an APN that is two parcels, an APN that's three parcels, an APN that's one parcel.
The only important thing is you pay your taxes or they come.
I was just curious on that. Okay.
Go ahead.
I just have kind of a, maybe it's facetious, on 343, discussing property owners associations.
Mm-hmm.
So the general statement here, and it's not new, it's existing. County may require the formation of a property owners association or other legal binding maintenance mechanism as a condition of approval for a subdivision where private improvements or common facilities are created that will require ongoing maintenance and are not to be maintained by a public entity.
Yep.
I get that this applies to a subdivision before us for approval. I'm thinking McLeod, which is an unincorporated town. Does the county also have the power to tell an unincorporated municipality to create their own?
No, McLeod is a community services district, right? They're their own governing little semi-autonomous.
New to what? The old subdivision. This is now because what are we going to do with the common ground?
Right.
And you got to have somebody respond.
Yeah. I was just thinking about how the county can require that for a subdivision. How about going back to the community service?
Yeah.
You deal with this. You deal with your vacation rentals.
McLeod's not going to listen. McLeod's not going to listen to this.
Okay. Anything under penalties, remedy, enforcement penalties and remedies?
Again, this is all pretty much standard stuff.
Yeah, I didn't see anything. Okay, and then we're under Part 7, Zoning Code Administration.
Again, this will go pretty fast. It's not of any interest to the commission. Let me open that up.
Specifically, you're opening that up.
Go ahead. So I... I'm already down to mitigation monitoring program.
Give me a number, please.
Like 358.
Oh, good.
Has the county had a mitigation monitoring program, or is this new?
Every major project usually has that. Like, say, for a subdivision, they're supposed to have a mitigation monitoring program. That's the SEQL document. I'm talking like I know about it, but I know because we just dealt with this project for Chertoff, right? They had a mitigation monitoring reporting program. But again, any large projects that require mitigation, we're supposed to have some sort of monitoring program that says, hey, you know, we approved this project because you said you were going to have a field available for emergency, you know what I mean?
It's yeah, like, yeah.
You know, so we're going to have some sort of program that just makes sure you're complying with all these.
That they checked all the
yes.
boxes of condition of approval.
Yes.
Gotcha. Okay.
I think before the SEQL projects when we've had a mitigated negative declaration or an EIR, they've had their own mitigation yes. reporting program. We just haven't had anything codified in our municipal code before, so that is wholly new.
Okay. Yeah, because I was like, I don't remember seeing it. Okay, thank you.
See, if you look, purpose and intent is directly tied, right? We're supposed to establish procedures to monitor the mitigation measures that were determined in that SEQL process. So basically what Bill was saying.
Okay. So just to catch you up, Mr. Fowle, I asked if the, I'm on page, 357, 358, if there was a mitigation monitoring program prior, wasn't aware of one, but basically just going through the checklist and making sure that they did what they said they were going to do.
So when we went through the housing portion, which included subset vacation rentals, when we set conditions there and we mentioned there's going to be monitoring by the county, that safety standards, they're up for review periodically. That is good there, doesn't need to be included here.
Yes,
okay.
It's totally different.
Okay.
And because that process was so different, that's why we made it a separate permit, had a separate process. Even though the process is similar, it's so unique that we're calling it a vacation rental permit, and it has a different process.
Okay, so our mines and SMARA has its own monitoring.
Yes.
So it has its own separate section in the general plan. What types of monitoring are we talking about under zoning?
So the SMARA
other than subdivision.
So SMARA, I'm trying to remember what part that SMARA was under, but I'm very it might have been part 4 that we already discussed prior. Mm-hmm. But SMARA, basically our county code is basically just implementing the state level law
right.
at the county level, and we were supposed to every few years update our code to make sure it's reflective. And this current code, staff went through and made sure that it would pass when SMARA comes up again, when the SMARA board
right.
comes and says,
no, no, I get that. I guess, let me start the question differently. Is this section of mitigation and monitoring
that's separate from
solely
for subdivisions?
Identified for subdivisions, period.
No,
nothing
this,
else.
No, this mitigation.
I thought it applied to more than just subdivisions.
All the projects. All projects that have mitigation pressure, mitigation measures under CEQA.
Okay.
Okay.
So anytime there's a condition of approval, like so, say some of them have to have a biological survey or prior to whatever, or they've got specific requirements, I assume this would then set that out.
You can't camp in the field this time of year because these certain birds are nesting, and so one of the mitigation measures is no camping, even though it's a kids' camp, but you can't camp in this area.
So if you have a limited operating period.
You know,
so it's compliance monitoring
yes.
with the plan.
So that's what I was thinking this meant.
How are we going to board that?
Well,
we generally don't have the staff to go out, but at the same time, there are certain projects where we want to have these condition approvals and we want to have the mitigation monitoring program so we can have it as an enforcement mechanism. And really, the cost of the mitigation is on the proponent. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. The county isn't supposed to be paying for the mitigation monitoring, right? You're the project proponent. It's your project. We, Planning Commission, approved it. You're supposed to be making sure that the monitoring program is funded, or the monitoring is happening, and report that back to the county. Now, if the county is not satisfied with your reporting or believes you're not in compliance, then we can go with our code enforcement. But generally, it's the project proponent that's responsible for paying for the monitoring and mitigation.
And this will only apply when we have a use permit or an AUP in effect. And actually, an AUP would not include CEQA anything. CEQA is going to be a UP coming before us.
Yeah.
So it will only apply if we have a condition in the use permit that something needs to be monitored.
Yes, because CEQA says the only way we can approve this project if you fix this so it doesn't violate CEQA.
Okay.
And it sounds like almost like it's going to be additional department that you would have to build out within the planning department.
Well, it's already existing, right? Because we use it in all of our major projects. Like, even
you're already doing the monitoring.
You know, the staff report that comes to you, even though they may not phrase it as mitigation monitoring and reporting program, but even Golden Eagle School had certain conditions. You know, like, okay, you can't. I think it was. I don't remember what it was.
So you're already doing the follow up, though.
Yes. Okay. You know, so you're because you may approve the use permit, but it doesn't get issued until those conditions approval are completed, and planning says, yeah, you've added all the safety signs, the kids walking crosswalks, that sort of thing.
And back to Mr. Carroll, this is just codifying the actual process that you guys are doing. Okay, and then it's just definitions. After that,
now we have non-conforming parcels, structures, and uses.
Oh no! Do you have questions?
That's still correct.
On 361.
Hey, what's your?
How often?
We do have this come up very often. We had recently someone out on Highway. Is it 89 out toward McLeod? Past McLeod, but they said their property has been operating as a RV park since the 1960s. And we're like, well, you don't have a use permit, you know, showing that. So to us, that's non-conforming because there's no use permit. But if you can provide evidence that this was the existing use, then we're going to allow it, you know, as it is. But if you want to make additions, then it's better for you to come in and get a use permit to expand beyond that.
Okay.
But if you could show us pictures from the 1960s and say, yeah, see, my grandpa built this and look at all the RVs, you know, we're not going to be like, ah, you don't have a use permit, we're shutting you down. We're going to be like, you're allowed to maintain that, but if you want to expand it, then you got to come in for a use permit so we can modernize.
Highway 89 is going to be four lanes.
That's crazy. They're going to do a roundabout in McLeod, except there's resistance to it. But
I just hope they make it big enough for log trucks.
Going up and down the hill.
Because they just did one.
And livestock.
Yeah. Orders. But they just did one in Highway 99 going to Chico. And the trucks run over the center divider every time. They didn't design it for semis. With the Walmart Supercenter for me. Anyways.
So was this what you're talking about? Was that complaint driven?
Which one?
On 89.
Oh no, it wasn't. It was them wanting to expand from an RV park to also have different facilities. So we were like, okay, you know, we don't
have. You're not going out hunting looking.
No, no, no. It's never. You know, it's more you come in and you have a problem or you want to do something and we help you. That's our total philosophy of community development. It's like, how do we help the community? Yes.
Out there.
We just look straight ahead when we drive down Old State. All that construction happening in Grenada or Gazelle. Or something.
Yeah.
Quit putting it on Facebook.
Okay.
Again, after non-conforming structures, it's just the procedure for public hearing notices, and you know, that's of no interest, just because it's standard in what we're always doing. We just rephrased it to make it more consistent with modern English so people can readily understand what's being required of them.
So I went through it, and I didn't see anything that stuck out with the general process.
I mean, there were little things like, throughout the code, they refer like 10 days. Was it 10 working days, 10 calendar days? So we went consistent and said 10 calendar days, that type of thing. And then when county council goes through and vets it, they'll have a better understanding of what that is. But that's been my concern reading a lot of code in other places. It's not clear what they mean. Okay. You know, so if we're consistent when we talk about days, it's always calendar days, that sort of thing. We went through the code to make sure everything is consistent so people don't have to be second guess. Like, it means this thing in this section, but it means a different thing in a different section. That doesn't work. It should be the same meaning in all the sections.
So my next one's on 378. Under definitions.
Okay. Part A.
Okay. Yeah. So the dairy, commercial poultry, commercial feedlot, hog farm. So this definition directly ties to our AG1, AG2 use permit AUP table. So we need to make sure we added up in that table pasture-based versus confinement.
Yes.
So this definition down here need to add pasture-based and make sure that this dairy, commercial, etc., is confinement. Two different. To make sure that we remain consistent.
I find that my spelling has gotten bad with the use of computers and spell check now. Pasture and confinement. And confined operations.
Since we delineated and created a second row.
No, that's a good idea. And we'll change the chickens and turkeys and hogs. Chickens and turkeys are hogs. That was a full day.
Yes.
Day's not over.
Okay. So moving on.
I had one more question. Didn't we discuss modifying or amending the definition of the boarding house for clarification to delineate it between the bed and breakfast? When we were looking at the table, we need to make sure the appropriate notation's done in definitions.
Okay, so match the definitions to the tables.
Yeah.
Okay.
But use the tables as your guiding.
The use tables. Staff did have some brief comments before the commission closes their meeting.
Oh, this is where it was. Under agriculture use, page 374, I knew I saw it here somewhere. So it's defining if property used for agriculture operations. Mm-hmm. That last sentence does not include wildlife rescues and preserves. No problem there. But it does include dairies, feedlots, poultry, and hog raising operations. Those are ag uses. But they require additional permits
yes.
from North Coast Water Quality Control Board. But they are ag uses, and I think we need to be real careful if we signal out three types of ag, saying not ag, when they are ag.
I think that was just because given the commercial scale of those, they were being treated differently, even though they're ag, they just...
Okay, but...
But we should rephrase that better.
That
so
needs
clear.
To be rephrased.
Yeah, that makes sense. But that's why they probably distinguish that, right? Because of the scale.
And also an ag enterprise needs to be rephrased.
Okay.
And then also on ag enterprise, where it is listing, where it says including structures and uses incidental to the enterprise, such as egg sheds and warehouses, processes, when it says and sale of ag products mm-hmm. and supplies, I would like to see added in there and services.
And that's in agrotourism or
ag enterprise?
Ag enterprise.
Yeah.
And services.
It's a, yeah, just include it in where it says, or sale of agricultural products, supplies, and services.
And services. There.
Which is different than the servicing of ag supplies mm-hmm. and equipment.
So sale of agricultural products and supplies and services.
Yep.
Well, maybe get rid of this and, right? So and just...
Yeah, do products, comma, supplies, yeah. comma, and services.
Yeah. There we go.
Okay, that dealt with that one. The refreshment stand, you answered that question. Here's a question. So the verbal definition of refreshment stand uses multiple times the word farm and ag. Why don't we just call it a farm stand instead of a refreshment stand? When I see refreshment stand,
yeah,
you
think
it
like a soda.
Cookies.
Yeah.
Why don't we call it a farm stand?
Okay.
Because a farm stand would be all encompassing of grown and produced
farm stand
goods.
Yeah.
Does that include beer?
Huh?
Yep. Whiskey? Yep.
All made out of farm stand.
As long as you have your liquor license.
There you go.
Okay, I think that covered all of my questions. Yeah, I'm on page 401 and I don't have any more highlights.
Yay. Good. Okay, so moving on.
Did we save these? Should we save all this?
We have electronic, you can. I use my copies for starting fires in the winter.
So,
gold star.
Item four.
Well, I have a question because
Before. We
finished the staff report. But do we need to go through the supplemental staff report
No. No, the supplemental was actually a brief summary of the entire, all those sessions, and staff just pulled out the use tables, all the things that we felt that the Planning Commission would be interested in, is, right, and the other stuff we left out, such as the noticing.
Okay, so this is not going to be part of the general plan update?
No, the supplemental is just the...
Because otherwise, I was going to say, we need to go through there to make sure it is the same as what we just...
No, that's just a summary.
Okay.
It is just a summary to provide you an overview in case you didn't want to read the 400 pages.
Okay.
And then, so moving on, are there any other items for the discussion?
Staff has something after the commission.
Okay. Go ahead.
Oh, were staff comments?
Yeah, because I feel like we've, you know, under item four, we've given them plenty of direction to staff, so.
Okay, yeah.
No, I figured we're items for discussion, ongoing staff update to the general plan.
Oh, I was more talking about, yeah, it's an ongoing thing, and we're going to probably bring this back in the July meeting, having made all the changes and showing you where we made the changes.
Okay.
That would be that report. But the comment that I have is more earth-shattering. Bernadette Sisson is retiring from the county and to spending more time at Hilton Ranch. You know, just, I don't know if the price of beef is going up. But she's...
It is.
But, she's deciding to resign from the county and work more on her ranch. That was our announcement.
Okay, great. Thank you.
So we didn't want you to be like, where did she...
Well, make sure
you... Well, Smara, right now we have one mine that we're investigating, so we're doing Smara with that, but we're still transitioning, right? Right now,
you've got pitch you have to monitor every year.
Yes, yes. So we've already registered for the Smara training from the state to get certified.
Well, here we go again.
You know, but it's, you know, I do feel confident that we have, you know, the technical expertise and the desire to make sure it's done correctly, and I think the mining community will be happy with our taking over that. Just, it's going to be less confrontational, and we're going to try to be more.
But who's the person?
That was great!
Yes.
The question is, who's the person? Because we're down Rachel, down Bernadette, so...
It might be a discussion where she might be paid more coming in as a
consultant.
You know what I mean? Right? Because it might make sense to say, well, I can't be a full-time county employee, but...
Cheaper for the county.
But we could maybe do a contract to say, well, you know, with your Smara background, you just do the inspections.
Sure.
You know, there's different ways to handle it.
Okay.
Right, she's just down the road. You know, it's not like she's moving to Arkansas.
Yeah.
Right? She's just going to help, you know.
Well, make sure you tell her we take her.
And I think that was one of the things that we're looking
at. Commissioner Hart wants her back.
Well, I definitely will, you know, and that will, but we don't want to tell her that too much because then she's like, well, then that means the contract should be this amount. And, right, and it's obviously the case.
Hey,
you go
straighten out a lot of stuff.
Yeah. And she'll probably get paid more as a private contractor for the county as opposed to a county employee. Because it's weird, we don't have money for employees, but if you're a contractor, you know, open the purse and checkbook, set your price. It's weird, but that's how county government works sometimes. If you're a vendor, you're paid better than an employee. That's just how it goes.
Future meetings. The next regular meeting of the Planning Commission is scheduled for Wednesday, July 15th at 9 o'clock. I will not be here. I have a conflict.
At this time, we have no projects to bring before you that are ready. So it might be okay. We might to have a meeting in August and allow everyone to go on vacation on July.
Yeah, I have a meeting in Sacramento for the PFEC. I'm on that.
And that's similar to all the other commissions. The next meeting is in August or September. July is kind of a...
So if you have nothing to bring in front of us, should we go ahead and set the next meeting for August? Or is there still time to get something in July? And should we hold that?
I'd just go with August.
I would. But again, it's
So then let's do that. I would recommend doing August, so then that would be August 19th. So why don't we set this, that the next regular meeting of the planning commission will be August 19th at 9 a.m.
And we can do that by motion.
I would move that our next regular meeting of the planning commission be scheduled for August the 19th, 2026 at 9 o'clock a.m.
And that'll be perfect. That'll allow county council between now and then to vet.
Okay, so we have a motion from Commissioner Fowle and a second from Commissioner Veal. So voice vote, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay, motion carries.
So now that August meeting with conversation with the consultants is potentially the month when we're going to start getting back final documents potentially for further general plan discussion?
Yes, that's the hope. And staff would like to get, now that planning commission's weighed in on the documents, we want to provide it to county council to do their final pass. And then so in the August meeting, then we'll all feel more comfortable. The departments have looked at it, consultants signed off, planning commission signed off, county council had time to review it. Then would be a better position to be like, okay, let's bring it to the board now that all the parties, you know.
Okay. Good. Any correspondence?
None.
Okay. Staff comments? Any additional staff comments?
No, that was the major thing.
Commissioner comments. Commissioner Villa?
Coming north on I-5, at the Easy Street off ramp, if you continue on the frontage road going north, you see a sign that says, coming soon.
Mm-hmm.
You seen it?
Yeah, you're talking about Easy Street, that's the old, by the gas station.
Shamrock.
There. Yeah, yeah. So Shamrock, yes.
The question is, are you aware what the coming soon is?
The coming soon, I think that was going to be that gas station that they're going to put in that the...
Okay.
You know, that Easy Street Market, the wooded, the cabin.
Okay.
But I think they were going to build, I've seen plans for a more modern, you know.
Okay. So, is that in the county's jurisdiction?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. You know who owns it?
Mark Crawford.
Yep.
No.
Is that a trick question? I don't know offhand.
No, the owner is Wairika Entertainment.
Oh.
The same people that own... I'm assuming the casino that's not in effect, the service station.
No, the casino not in effect is...
Okay, it's not... But the, okay, but this is Wairika Entertainment. And it's the rumor around the campfire is it's going to be a truck stop.
Oh, there's going to be one across the street from at the old pellet mill.
No.
That's a different location.
This is... Wairika Entertainment, I believe, is the entity that came out of Florida.
It's a terrible location for a truck stop.
Anyway, if it's within your jurisdiction, then that's fine, because I think... But if it's not, on the Walker Road that came over and Fairlane Road, they took down some dilapidated housing and for a RV park. We didn't say it had no jurisdiction over that whatsoever. Rick said it was because of the entity, the casino entity, the same people who put the gas station in there.
Yeah, Alturas Rancheria bought that, where the old RV place was, and they moved everything out.
Okay, so Rancheria RV and
it is called
Wairika Entertainment are two different entities?
Two different.
Well, I can tell you on parcel data, it's all one. That's all Wairika Entertainment.
Whoa.
So if you pull up that parcel, it all comes up.
Oh, he did change the name. Okay, well, that is under the Rancheria. That's Darren.
Darren Rhodes.
Yep, yeah.
So he's proposing this...
Oh, he owns all that.
Yeah, but okay. I thought and the discussion was doing down here on actual Easy Street, but okay, so you're talking on the east side of I-5.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, on the other, on the other side
of truck stops?
Huh? Yes.
Well, that's
real.
That's the rumor. That's the rumor. But this is the question I could ask you. Is that within the county's jurisdiction?
Yeah. That's unincorporated.
It's unincorporated, but the question is whether or not
is it reservation creep?
tribal.
Yeah.
They can't, like a tribe, California tribe, California is a PL 280 state, so tribes generally don't hold the land as a reservation land, right?
Well, the only thing I'm mentioning is it's got a lot of people concerned because the rumors around, you know how that goes.
Yeah.
So just be on top of it because what I know about Darren Rose, he kind of does things and then...
He starts a lot of things and doesn't finish them.
Well, what about the asphalt plant? He started that and finished that.
Well, the cement he sold.
Well, no, but the asphalt. Remember the Eagle guy from Idaho came in and they were batching asphalt there.
Yes.
And then they, somehow he got said, no, you can't do it. All I'm saying is that there's a lot of people concerned what is going on there.
I know who laid all the main line and did all the sewer and laid all the power and did all the grading out there.
Hmm.
He told me about it every night. My son and Jackson Newton are the two that ran the equipment out there.
To what?
All
so
that
are
development.
We supposed to be talking about potential future?
Well,
it's in the question.
It was an update, but it's interesting.
If
whether
it was what I was thinking of, it was a by right project anyway.
Okay.
So,
yeah,
and I think that's the assumption by the party.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Well, anyway, buckle up if it's.
So we're talking about 384 potential truck stops.
Oh, yeah, we know. Yeah, sure.
Wow.
Hey,
that much?
If you want a little something, you like to move dirt. On your way home, whoop, over the Rain Rock.
Let's go ahead and adjourn the meeting.
And then out
so
over the road.
Move to adjourn the meeting.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. Go home that way. Go by the casino.